Welcome to The Right You, where we teach you a little Texas law and provide hints for navigating the Texas legal system in the process, all sponsored by The Right Firm. So get ready to start your legal education.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of The Right You, where we try to teach a little bit about Texas law and have some fun in the process. You know, this is going to actually be episode number 8, and our first series regarding Texas law. And, you know, the last series, last episode, we were coming to you from the Advanced Family Law course in San Antonio, Texas. And, you know, during this episode, and as a result of a book that I was reading that was given to me, by someone, I thought I would talk to you a little bit about debt and credit as it relates to the divorce process. And just if you wanted to look at that on your own, it's an excellent book about credit, secrets and strategies to saving your financial life. And it's written by a gentleman named Rodney Anderson. And it's called Credit 911. And it has a chapter in it on divorce. And so I advise you that it's a pretty good resource. Regarding credit, it's a situation like Rodney Anderson talks about, where he essentially is referencing that a lot of attorneys don't take the time to talk to their clients in a divorce content about how credit may be affected, or how some of the decisions that they're making bear a relationship to their financial life. And in Texas, community liability and community debt sort of remains an ambiguous term. And the Marital Property Act of 1967, since that time, it's been the intent of Texas law to mandate that one spouse is not personally liable for the debts of the other spouse, except when the other spouse was acting as an agent for the first spouse, or there was an incurring of debt for necessaries. When you look at that system as far as, the debt, it's important to know that and there are some cases that, talk about some things about, spouses could be held personally liable for debts created by business primarily, but not exclusively managed by one of them. But when you're talking about spousal liability, you need to understand that, community property is not subject to a liability that arises from an act of a spouse, except as provided by the family code. And that what's important to note is a spouse does not act as an agent for the other spouse solely because, of the marriage relationship. But in that context, I think it's important to note, and I see, occasionally people will come to my office during the initial consult, and they will say, what do I need to do, and how should I prepare myself, to handle the situations, pre-divorce, pre-filing. And, some lawyers do a good job, some lawyers don't. And what people don't understand is, when you're in law school, they really, and when you're taking your classes, on Texas family law, they really don't tell you some of the things that we're going to talk about here in a second. One of those things is that when you get divorced, that you need to understand that if you have decided that, and you've come to that point where you want to go through with the process, that inevitably you need to determine where you're going to live. And when you determine where you're going to live, one of the things that's important to note is where that address is going to be. And if that happens, that you would need to file a change of address notification with your post office, and also notify, creditors, utility companies, doctors, or any other individuals where that, your bills may be sent. You could easily set up a P.O. box for that. because, you know, the problem, and I've seen this happen time and time again in my own cases, even though we tell people about this stuff, which is, you know, someone will forget to do a change of address form, or and there may be a bill that someone's supposed to pay and it doesn't get paid. And so, you know, or they don't get that notice that is sent out by a creditor and then it goes delinquent. So it's important to, you know, essentially make sure that, you know, there isn't where those bills are to be sent. They're sent to an address where you are, and that someone knows how to reach you. Now, I will say, and you need to understand that that this is prior to the time period of filing, because many counties in Texas have adopted a standing order, which is essentially an injunction that goes into effect upon filing, and typically it's against both people. And so you're not going to be able, if a case is filed, you're not going to be able to change accounts, information, beneficiary designations, you know, any of these things that you know, where your address is located, utilities, credit cards. You're not going to be able to change that after the divorce has been filed. So it's important to look at that ahead of time. And then the other thing is, and I've told people to do this for years, is to get a credit report. Now, if you pick up a copy of that credit 911 book, they reference getting a joint credit report before visiting your attorney. And I think that that's a good idea, because, you know, you'll find accounts that haven't that you may not know, or you don't know that they were existed. And, you know, you need to go in there and look at that and make sure there's no debts in there that maybe you've forgotten or you just don't know of. Occasionally it'll happen where someone will come into my office. Maybe the divorce is already finalized, and they'll tell me, I went to go buy something. I went to go buy a car. I went to go buy, maybe I want to try to qualify for financing on a house. And then they realize that there's some other debt out there that they haven't remembered that's affecting their credit, that if they would have just taken care of it, you know, prior to the time period, you know, of filing, then they would be in a much better position to be able to deal with it. One of the things that we do, and typically, you can help your lawyer out by doing a listing of whatever accounts are, whether they're held in an individual's name or whether in a joint name. And that would be both your names on the account. It's important to know that prior to visiting your lawyer. If that's the case, then, you know, and a lot of times what I see people do when they come in my office is they'll just make a list or a sheet out of who the creditor is, what the balance is, and what the monthly payment is. And then whether or not, you know, it is your obligation individually or whether it's a joint obligation. You need to start thinking about which debts you would, you know, want to take. A lot of times what we see in Texas and Texas family law is that if you have incurred a debt since the date of separation, you're probably going to be responsible for that, depending on, you know, what the circumstances are. But I see a lot of judges and a lot of courts say, and you'll see a lot of decrees that'll say that you are responsible for the debts that you've incurred since separation. And, the other thing about that too is that if there if there's joint debt, then a lot of times what a judge will do is if that debt is tied to an asset, you know, maybe furniture, you go to a furniture store and you buy an item of furniture, and if you're awarded that item of furniture in a divorce case, then more than likely you're probably going to be taking that debt that goes along with it. The other thing I occasionally see is the student loans. And by and large, you know, a lot of times and many times, if you took out a student loan to pay for an education, then you're going to be responsible for paying that off. That seems sort of interesting, but a lot of times I occasionally have someone who will want the other party to be responsible for paying for the cost of their education. And I just don't see that as often where judges are going to make a party who received an education have the other party pay that off. Because they're really not getting any benefit for it. One of the things that's recommended is that if you do have a joint account, that account be, if at all possible, paid off and closed. And you need to understand that just because the decree of divorce would award that joint account to one person, it doesn't mean that they would be the other party would be relieved or released from any liability associated with it. And a lot of times you don't, you know, think how that could happen. But, you know, what happens if your name was on a joint account and, you know, someone didn't maintain the minimum balance? What happens if there was an overdraft provision on it? Then conceivably you could be liable for it. You know, make sure that you get to your lawyer a list, an itemized list of every debt owed and cross-reference with a joint credit report. Now, and what I mean on the credit report too, it needs to be a 3-in-1 credit report. So you need to have all major credit bureau or agencies on that report. Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion all need to be on there because different creditors report to different agencies, so you need to make sure that they're all listed so you can have a full and good credit information to provide to your lawyer. The other thing is, and I occasionally see this, a lot of times when a client will come into our office, we'll ask that they produce an inventory and appraisement. And, you know, this may be difficult to get, you know, when you just come into to lawyer's office, but you need to start thinking about securing the information such as the creditor's name, the full account number, you know, if there's any security tied to that debt, then also information such as the, VIN number, the vehicle identification number for an auto loan, et cetera, because that information is going to be we're going to need that information to put it in the decree of divorce. And if you start getting the information in advance and if you get it to your lawyer timely, then we're going to have it. And ultimately, we're going to need it for the decree so that the decree, which is a final document in the case, can specify clearly which asset is awarded to which party. The other thing, too, is recommended is to call your creditors on the credit report to ensure that they have your contact information and the right way to notify you in case any debts go delinquent. And, you know, creditors are going to call you because they're going to want to collect the money. But if they're calling the wrong number, if they're calling your, you know, soon-to-be ex, your ex may just blow them off, delete the number, et cetera, and that could affect your credit. And the other thing that's recommended is that you invest in a credit monitoring program from a date of separation, which is, you know, essentially just a company that's going to monitor to see if there's any unauthorized charges or to basically see, you know, that everything's okay with your credit. Another thing that I routinely will tell people is to check your credit card balances after the date of separation. And if you read the book by Rodney Anderson, the 911 Credit 911, he recommends that you check it every day so you don't get blindsided by the estranged spouse on a shopping spree. And occasionally I see that. I think he's right. You know, occasionally I'll see that where I'll see someone will go and they'll get the card and they'll go run out of debt. What I see a lot of times is they'll, not only that, but people will put their legal fees on it and it'll be on a joint card and that's, you know, it's acceptable. And even in Texas under the, if there is a restraining order about, you know, paying for certain things, shocking to note, and I occasionally say this to people, you know, isn't it interesting to note that one of the exceptions that's contained under what you can do is you can spend money to pay on your lawyer. So, but occasionally I'll see that. And not only should your credit cards be balanced, but also your joint bank account balances daily to see basically if you have equal access to those accounts, and look and see what's going on. So you can make sure what's going on with those accounts. Another thing is if you have an ATM or a credit card PIN number with all accounts, that you change those so that your spouse doesn't have access to that information. And remember there again, you need to do that before the temporary restraining order is in place in Texas because, you know, even though, you know, that temporary order in Texas is an order of the court and it's a piece of paper that says, you know, essentially how people are supposed to act. And, you know, the problem that you get into is that once that's violated, you know, then you're going to have to spend more money to try to get that money back. So it's easier just to take some proactive steps in order to be able to do that. And then I always tell individuals too, and I've told them this for years, to open up an individual bank account. I've told them to do it at a bank where they don't have their existing bank accounts. I've seen at least one or two cases where people have opened up a bank account in a bank where they had other accounts with their spouse, and then they'll go put money in their bank account. Maybe they'll have a joint bank account, and then the spouse will take all the money out, overdrafting the account, and then the bank will look to see if the individuals have any other accounts at the bank that they can pull the money from. And so that's just not a good situation. So I always say open it up at a bank account where you don't have an existing account, and so that there's not the potential for that happening. Also, you know, I've had people for years open up, you know, bank accounts just to create an extra fund so that they could have some emergency fund in case something were to happen, which is not a bad idea. And also, I see it where, you know, people have direct deposits now. A lot of people use online banking, and they'll have their paycheck paid to them to a joint account. And there's nothing worse than, you know, your paycheck being deposited into your account and then your spouse going and draining that out and taking it. And you know, the problem that I see is that, you know, occasionally, you know, you'll have a house payment or a car payment or something tied to that account. And when the spouse goes and takes the money out of it, then it leaves you in a position where there's no money to cover those. And that's very problematic. So what you need to do is, and this is prior to filing, not afterwards, because the injunction that'll go into place, most standing orders in, especially in North Texas, will have provisions on it that say that you know, that you can't do that, and so you don't want to be in violation of the court order. But, you know, as far as those automatic payments, you need to understand what that is, and don't forget that too. So what I suggest is that you monitor where the automatic draws are, and number two, that if you do open up a new account, that you have your employer switch that if you're getting a direct deposit pay and you have that deposited into out of that joint account and into your current account. It's also suggested that you put a fraud alert on your credit report so that, you know, if, you know, someone gets mad at you or they run up charges, then you'll have somebody who'll be monitoring it. What you need to also know is, and this is something that I see, is there is a provision under Texas that's normally put into a decree whereby you have to list out identifying information such as your name, where you live. There's even a place for social security numbers, driver's license, et cetera. And you would be shocked, but in the land that we live in of identity theft, I think that the divorce decree is just ripe for someone to go down. It's a public record. A lot of people are shocked by that. Filed at the courthouse, and a lot of people are just, you know, amazed that someone can just go pull up a file and it can have all their personal information in it. And for years in Texas under the law, with good cause and agreement by both people, you can leave that information out, and you'd be surprised or not and how many lawyers I've you know, argued with about, we're not putting that information in there, we're going to agree not to put it out. And I've even had one the last couple of years say, well, they're putting theirs in, but I can leave mine out. And I thought, well, you know, that's fine. I'm going to leave my client's information out of there if I can, as far as identifying information, because I don't want them to be a victim of identity theft. But if you want yours to be a victim, well, that's fine. And so we did. We left ours out. The other attorney put theirs in. Hopefully their client didn't see any problems with that. But I knew certainly when ours was done that ours would not. Now, the other thing I will tell you, which people like sometimes don't understand, is that if you have, you know, a house, which a lot of times people will want the house, and basically on the note, both their names on the note, when you see the decree, there will be a provision in the decree that awards the house to one party. Now, you have to understand with creditors that the decree has no bearing on a creditor. It's essentially an obligation that both spouses reached outside of this divorce case with a third-party creditor, and the decree does not change that arrangement. And a lot of people are shocked to know that. So if you have a house that has both your names on it, as far as a note, and you get the house, then, you know, I always say, if I have the client who gets the house, then, you know, if they miss the payment, then they're in trouble, but they know they're in trouble because they missed the payment. But if you have a situation where you do not get the house and the other spouse gets the house and you have a joint obligation under a note, the problem with that is that if the other spouse fails to make a payment, it's going to show up on your credit if your name's still on that note, and the decree does not relieve you of that liability. So, you know, what typically would need to happen is that that house would need to – your name would either need to be removed from that note by refinancing. You know, occasionally I'll see some mortgage companies will do an assumption where someone assumes a liability, but it's very rarely done. Yeah, I think they don't want to let both people off the note. And then the second thing is that, you know, or the house would need to be sold to get both people's names off the note. You know, a lot of times I will press a situation, and if we can't get someone to refinance or they won't qualify, I'll ask that the house be sold. If, you know, if my client wants that, just because I'm concerned that someone's not going to make the payment. And we're not just talking about not making the payment in total. Even late payments can affect your credit on that note, and it can affect your credit score. So that's really something that you need to be concerned about. The other thing too is, which is I think it's important, is, and that also would apply to a joint credit card and even to a car, a vehicle. Because if your name's on that note and someone fails to make a payment or they make the late payment, that could come back and affect you. So a lot of times we'll ask that any sort of liability like that, that we try to get it refinanced and try to remove a name. But, you know, the problem with that is that sometimes that's easier said than done because someone won't qualify. And if they don't qualify, then you have to start looking at those situations where potentially maybe it'll be sold. I'll tell you another interesting fact is, which you have to think as it relates to that house is, you know, a lot of times if you have a joint note on a house and people call up to figure out what the payoff of that note is that a lot of times now they're charging a fee. And so if you have an individual who is married to someone and, you know, their ex keeps calling to figure out what the payoff is on the note, well, they're going to charge a fee for that a lot of times now. So there could be an additional amount that is showing up on the statement itself. Which a lot of people don't think about, but that's just another little way that can cost you money. Now, so why is all this stuff important? It's important because, you know, your credit and your credit score is extremely important after this is over. A lot of people don't understand or don't realize that, you know, two people cannot live as cheap as one. And what happens when you go through divorce is a lot of people are separating households, which means not only do they have to separate households, but they have to separate property. And then sometimes you won't have the property that you had, so you'll need to go buy other things, furniture, TVs, et cetera, which, you know, may – your credit may affect what you can qualify to purchase. You may need to go purchase a new car. It's going to affect that. Down the road, you may want to purchase another house. And so all these things are incredibly important, and you need to make sure that you sit down and you talk to a lawyer about them. And we're basically just scratching the surface on some of these things, which is sort of impossible for us to do in the short time of our podcast. But, you know, it's really important to look at credit when you're going through divorce, to do a little bit of pre-planning, you know, talk to your lawyer about, you know, where you sit financially. And, you know, that's the benefit with the right firm that we have, because, you know, one of the things that's recommended is that you seek out a lawyer who has knowledge about financial information. And you know, you hear all the time people say, oh, someone's a divorce specialist. Well, you know, I'm a divorce specialist. I'm a board-certified family law attorney. I've been doing this for 16 years, and I can tell you that there's still a lot of lawyers, you know, generally that don't talk to their clients about credit or debt issues. And the good news for our firm is that we do have individuals who not only, you know, work in the area of taxation. You know, Paul Wright, he's with our firm, is a CPA. We have, you know, other lawyers who do bankruptcy, so they're used to dealing with creditors and can get your questions answered on those things fairly quickly. You know, or, you know, other areas of law that would come into play. So really, honestly, we have a resource where we can go to different lawyers in the firm to talk about some of these issues. And so, you know, that's the type of situation where you need when you're dealing with, you know, some of the property issues, some of the debt issues, potential bankruptcy issues. Because, you know, if you get into a situation where someone truly is affecting your credit, you may have no other option. We see this all the time in family law cases where the last recourse or the last out is potentially someone filing for bankruptcy. And certainly that'll be another issue that we'll talk about in another podcast in the future. But I hope that these issues have, you know, been helpful for you. as far as just a brief discussion of debt and credit in a divorce context in Texas. And thank you for joining us on this podcast. We hope it's been informative, and we hope here at The Right You that you will continue on your journey for your education in Texas law and join us in the process.
Thanks for listening to us on The Right View. If you'd like to reach us, you may call us at 972-353-4600 or check us out on the web, therightlawyers.com.